Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history-telling podcast chronicling the epic story of America decade by decade from the 18th century to the 20th. Original music and immersive sound design accompany us on our storytelling journey. Listen to and follow History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanzus.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Anthony Castrovince from MLB.com, one of their lead writers. He was in Wichita for the Jackie Robinson statue ceremony back in August. Got to meet Anthony, came on our show, and we appreciate him being on again. Good afternoon, Anthony.
Hello. Nice to hear from you again, Bob.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. I enjoy following you on Twitter and your snarky comments. Am I allowed to say that?
And puns.
They're fun. They're fun. You're a fun follower.
Sure.
I'll just put it that way.
You got to keep it fun because, there's a lot of not fun things going on in our world. So baseball's supposed to be fun. So let's keep it that way.
Yeah, the more fun, the better. So let's start with something that people may not be having a lot of fun with, and that's the Los Angeles Dodgers basically signing everybody who becomes a free agent.
Yeah.
That's obviously an overstatement. But it may not feel that way to some people in baseball right now. What's the fallout of this? Is this a good thing for baseball? Is it a bad thing? Is it just a thing?
Well, I think it's just a thing, really. I think it's a thing we've seen before. It's a sport without a salary cap. They do have luxury tax thresholds that have prevented certain teams and some big teams, the Yankees included, from doing completely crazy things in free agency and with their payroll. But if you are willing to pay the tax, you can do extraordinary things. We saw that with the Mets a couple of years ago, and a lot of the conversations I'm hearing about the Dodgers now, we were having about the Mets 2 years ago, and it turned out that team kind of stunk. I don't think that's going to happen in the Dodgers, but it certainly can. You know, baseball is a funny sport that way, but I think it's just the nature of the beast when the only limitation is a tax, and it can be a big one. That tax can get pretty monumental if you run up your bill high enough. I think the more interesting conversation is about the deferred money and you know, simply how much money they have deferred for future years. It's not a new tactic by any means. You know, plenty other teams have done it. Plenty other contracts have had it, but they're running up some pretty significant debt for future years. And I don't know if that's just going to be passed on to another ownership group down the road or who knows what. But so, I mean, that's all kind of big picture conversation. Maybe it leads to more conversation in the future. You know, I think there's a worthy discussion to be had about both a cap and a floor in MLB and whether that would be good for, you know, the long-term health of the game and for smaller market clubs and that sort of thing to have more of a level competitive field. But it's really interesting because between injuries and age and having PED testing in this era and clamping down on that, I mean, you see some interesting things happen where sometimes it pays to be younger and more flexible and sometimes the little guys take down the big guys that way. So I just kind of roll my eyes at a lot of the conversation about the Dodgers because it's like, A, we've seen this before, and B, nothing's guaranteed in this game. I mean, they're going to have a lot of pressure on them, of course, and I'm sure they relish that, and they did get it done last year, but look how they got it done last year. They were really piecing it together pitching-wise where, you know, most of their top starters were on the shelf. You know, that kind of thing happens a lot in our game.
I think there's a sentiment among some people that there's a lot of owners just sitting on their hands, and I agree with that to some extent, but that, you know, if they really had the will to win, that they'd go out and build a team similarly and be active in these free agent and trade markets. How accurate do you think that is? We know that owners don't really open their books. We don't see the finances, but could the Colorado Rockies theoretically say, hey, we're getting Juan Soto and we won't be outbid?
Well, I think they can. I do think, though, that it's just the nature of the game where, you know, certain markets just don't have the revenue streams as other markets. There's a real disparity there. you know, you mentioned the Rockies. I mean, they extended Nolan Arenado at one time, and that was their star player, their signature player. Troy Tulowitzki had been there beforehand, and that got away from them. They ended up trading him, but they went all in with Nolan Arenado and very quickly regretted it. I think that's what happens in markets of that size, is if you're going to do contracts like that, you have to be willing to do multiple contracts like that. Otherwise, you have one player making up 25, 30% of your payroll, and if he regresses or gets hurt, you're in a real bind really quickly. The best teams spread it around and have a pipeline. I mean, that's what kind of gets overlooked with the Dodgers, is this is not a club that just went out and bought a championship. And this is a club that does everything well. They scout well. They develop well. Yeah, I mentioned the Mets earlier. They tried to throw money at every problem. They tried to build a champion in free agency. It completely blew up in their face. The sport really doesn't allow you to do that. It's just too multifaceted, and there's too many different dynamics in a 162-game season, plus, you know, what it takes to get through the expanded postseason format now. If you don't have that pipeline to start with, if you don't draft well or trade well or develop well, I mean, you're not going to be in a position that the Dodgers are, where you can then go out and add on, you know, pieces in free agency and be in a really good spot. So you're absolutely right. There's teams that can and should do more, but they do have to be cautious. I mean, I'm here in Cleveland. Like, they were able to get their franchise player, Jose Ramirez, to sign a below-market deal. He wanted to be here. He is here. And that contract, it should allow them to do more. They haven't done, I would argue, they haven't done enough around him, because they got the ALCS last year and probably should be doing more this winter to build off of that. But, you know, those are the one-off situations you need, where you're able to lock up a homegrown player and then build around him, as opposed to trying to build your club externally. It's almost impossible to do.
Talking with Anthony Castrovince from Major League Baseball, MLB.com. What's your feeling about the Hall of Fame? It looks like we got an opportunity, and our show records a little earlier. We air a little later. The class may have already been announced, but it looks like we have an opportunity to have six former players going into this class, all of them worthy. Are you on board with Dick Allen, Dave Parker, obviously already in from the Veterans Committee, and then Ichiro, CC Sabathia, Billy Wagner, and Carlos Beltran?
Yeah, it looks like a pretty good chance of a pretty big class here as we sit here recording this. I mean, Ichiro is in for sure. The only question is, will he be unanimous? I'm pleasantly surprised by the public balloting for CeCe, a guy who I covered very early in his career here in Cleveland. Was, of course, at the Jackie Robinson statue unveiling out there in Wichita last summer. Great to see him at that. And he's been such a great ambassador for the game, you know, events like that, and just generally, you know, being outspoken and just being such a great representative of the game, and had a great career. I am a little surprised. He doesn't have the traditional Hall of Fame numbers in terms of wins and innings necessarily, but you have to gauge guys, judge guys within the context of their era. It's actually interesting. He has the most innings of anybody who's debuted since 1989. He has 251 wins. He has over 3,000 strikeouts. So on some level, it is there in terms of the big round numbers. On some levels, it isn't. I think he's generally regarded as, you know, one of the premier pitchers of his era, and it's great to see that he has a real chance of being a first ballot Hall of Famer. If he doesn't get in this year, he'll get in next year. And then, you know, it's more iffy. Billy Wagner, he was 5 votes short last year. I think he'll get over the top tonight. Relief pitchers are probably still a little underrepresented in the Hall of Fame, so he should probably be in there. He's in the 400 save club. And then Carlos Beltran, that's an interesting one. You know, his role in the Astros sign stealing scandal in 2017 probably hurt him in his first ballot and maybe a bit in his second ballot, but that kind of softens over time. At the end of the day, you look up and he's one of the great power-speed combos the game has ever seen. So he might be one where that one seems like a 50-50 ball, you know, right now, where it's hard to say how the private ballots will go versus the public ballots that we've already seen, the writers who have made their ballots public. But again, he's another one where if he doesn't get in this year, I like his chances in the next couple of years for sure.
So it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, I don't think at all, but you see voters in the Pro Football Hall of Fame like, hey, Terrell Davis, he had a 2,000-yard season and was done by 28 or something. Hall of Famer, Tony Boselli, 4 really good years at tackle, career ends really early, Hall of Famer. Do you think there will ever be a shift to how voters, especially younger voters, look at this? David Wright, I mean, we have so many guys on this ballot who they were Hall of Famers until they were 30, and then they didn't decline well enough so they're not they're not Hall of Famers. Will there ever be a shift to look more closely at David Wright or Felix Hernandez or some of those guys?
You know, I've seen some support for Felix Hernandez, which I think is good to see because, I mean, there is like a peak there of 6 or 7 years where, again, just utterly dominant, you know, one of the best pitchers of his era. And you have to understand that the role has changed so much, speaking specifically about starting pitchers. You know, we can't expect guys to have 300 wins, you know, to get in the Hall of Fame, or we're never going to have another Hall of Famer. So, you know, everyone's going to have their protocols with that and what they're comfortable with, but I would be comfortable voting for Felix Hernandez. I think Andrew Jones is a really interesting test case for what you're talking about, and we are seeing more support. Andrew Jones he was on 7% of ballots in his first year in 2018. Last year was his seventh ballot. He's on 61.6%. I think he's going to get in. I don't think it'll be this year. It could be next year, but you know, this year we'll see where he finishes. But that's a guy who his career went off a cliff after 30. But you got to remember that he came up at age 19 and he was one of the best defensive center fielders of all time. And he might've done enough in that age 19 to age 30 that the fall off doesn't matter so much. And, you know, there's an appreciation for what he was able to do within that window of time in his 20s. He wins 10 gold gloves. He's a 5-time All-Star. He's one of the best players on a great Braves team. If he gets in, I think that does kind of show a shift in what Hall of Fame voters are willing to let through the door, really. And I say that in a good way because I'm a big Hall guy, and we really have to judge players within the context of their times as opposed to trying to compare everybody to Willie Mays and Babe Ruth. I mean, it's not reasonable. I think we have the metrics now to do a really good job of understanding how a certain era functioned, what was valued at that time. You know, CeCe Sabathia pitching in an era where the bullpens became of greater prominence, and now we're at the point where bullpens often pitch as many or more innings than the starting pitchers. So you have to recalibrate along with that.
Anthony Castrovince with us. I got one more question, and it's this selfish one. I'm a Cardinals fan for a long, long time. I'm not sure exactly what they're doing this offseason. Nolan Arenado must feel like a pinball. Is Chaim Bloom, who's going to take over after this season from John Mozeliak, is he going to get this thing figured out and straightened out? Are the Cardinals going to kind of be the gold standard, at least in the National League Central, ever again, Anthony?
I think the NL Central, it doesn't take much to become the gold standard there. I think having a good, solid plan in place and executing it, you know, doing well in the drafting as they've done many times in years past, can point you there. And they have such a supportive fan base that then you can top things off by making moves in free agency. So you could argue they should be trying to do that right now with just given the state of the division. I don't think, you know, the Brewers had a tremendous year last year, but they have their challenges for sure. You know, they lost Willie Adames in free agency, and they just generally have a challenge. They traded Devin Williams, you know, so they just generally have a challenge year over year to remain at that level. The Cubs aren't blowing anybody away. The rest of the division, the Reds and Pirates aren't blowing anybody away. So there's opportunity there. It seems like every year. Now I do understand that the way things have blown up in their face the last couple of years, there is an argument to be made to do what they intend to do, which is, you know, get younger, get more, versatile and just, you know, take advantage of what trade chips they have. But to date, they haven't done that. That's why I'm scratching my head right along with you. I'm not sure what's going on there this offseason. I get that Arenado is kind of held up by Alex Bregman's free agency, but still nothing else has happened. Like if you are going to go down the retooling route, then deal Ryan Helsley from that bullpen. You know, there's probably a strong market for him coming off the year he had. So just pick a lane, you know, go for it or don't, but pick a lane. Don't be stuck in the middle. This offseason seems like they're stuck in the middle. As for Chaim Bloom, I have tremendous respect for him. I thought he got a raw deal in Boston. I think you look at, you know, they're one of the more, they might have the best system in the game right now. And that's a big credit to the work he had done before he was unceremoniously canned. So I think that was a really good gift for the Cardinals. And, you know, if you're going to transition from the Mozeliak era, as they are doing here, Chaim Bloom, he's a good way to go, in my opinion.
Anthony, we really appreciate you taking some time to come on with us. We love talking baseball. Nobody better to talk it with. Thank you, and best of luck the rest of the week, and we look forward to spring training.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Great to talk with you.
Anthony Castrovince. Always enjoy his segments on a hot stove, and whenever he pops up on the MLB Network.
Very good at what he does.
Well, yeah, he's a Cleveland guy.
Absolutely. Former.
I'm sure that means a lot to you.
Of course it does. He is the Indians beat writer for a while.
All right, coming up next, we've got a game coming up in hour number two. But first, we're going to talk with former Shocker Manny Seferis from the 1964-65 Final Four team. That's next. Stay with us.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.